Krishna se tomara, Krishna dite paro, tomara shakati ache. Amito kangala, Krishna Krishna boli, dhaita va pache pache. Amito kangala, Krishna Krishna boli, dhaita va pache pache. Amito kangala, Krishna Krishna boli, dhaita va pache pache. Amito kangala, Krishna Krishna boli, dhaita va pache pache. Oh he Vaishnava Thakura, Doyara sagara edase koruna kori. Oh he Vaishnava Thakura, Doyara sagara edase koruna kori. Oh he Vaishnava Thakura, Doyara sagara edase koruna kori. Oh he Vaishnava
O venerable Vaishnava, O ocean of mercy, be merciful unto your servant. Give me the shade of your lotus feet and purify me. I hold on to your lotus feet. Teach me to control my six passions, which are the mind, anger, the tongue, the stomach, and the genitals. Teach me to rectify my six faults, and the six faults are overeating, attachment to material things, inability to follow the regulative principles, sense gratification, useless idle talk, and impure habits. Bestow upon me the six qualities, and the six positive qualities are enthusiasm in the practice of devotional service, firm faith in the devotional process, a strong desire to attain prema bhakti, a favorable service attitude, avoidance of non-devotees, and appreciation of the company of the devotees. And offer unto me the six kinds of holy association. The six methods of association are to go to an assembly of devotees, to invite devotees into one's home, to discuss and hear devotional topics, to take the Mahaprasad of devotees, and to offer Mahaprasad to devotees. Please bless me by giving me just one drop of faith in which to obtain the great treasure of the holy name of Krishna. Krishna is yours. You have the power to give him to me. I am simply running behind you, shouting, Krishna, Krishna. Hare Krishna, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur Ki Jai. Om Aginati Midandasya Jananjana Salakaya. Chakshu umilitam jena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master very kindly forced open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. And therefore I'm indebted to Srila Prabhupada. And indebted means that there's no way in the three worlds, in the scope of eternity, that I could pay back that debt. But I simply beg for the opportunity to keep trying. Hare Krishna. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur Ki Jai. So it's a big topic to cover. It's a great purification on my part to attempt to say a few things about Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. We won't obviously cover much of his glories. We'll only touch a few of them. But what struck me in trying to prepare was how Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, it wasn't just like, Krishna didn't just hand him this service with a piece of cake, you could say, you know. It wasn't easy. It was a struggle for him to get established and stuff, and I want to talk about that also a little bit. But first, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself has revealed in some of his songs of his spiritual identity. In the Kalyana Kalpataru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, Bhaktivinoda holds your feet and asks you to engage this unworthy servant of Alita Sakhi in the service of the divine couple while they perform Rasa Leela. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is described as the best of the followers of Rupa Manjari, who is the leader of Lalita Sakhi's entourage. So this is, you know, the great personality whom we're trying to glorify today. In the Gita Mala, in the song Siddha Lalasa, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives his eternal spiritual identity as Kamala Manjari, the servant of Sri Rupa Manjari. And her kunja is in the bower of Lalita. So that, I just wanted to mention that first, because as we speak of his earthly pastimes here, it's interesting to keep it in retrospect and see the comparison of how it was. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in 1838, September 2nd, 1838, in Bir Naga, India, in a little town who used to be called Ula. And he disappeared from the world 75 years later. So he was 75 years old when he left the world. It was on June 23rd in 1914. But his early life was really, had a lot of calamities. So he was the fourth son of his, in the family. He had three elder brothers. But even before he was 7 years old, his three brothers died of cholera. And shortly after that, his father also left his body from cholera. And in the course of time, not long, the whole village of Ula was decimated with this cholera virus. Everyone, practically speaking, was left their bodies due to that cholera thing. So he had a very, his family position was his father and his mother both came from wealthy, like Kayasta type families, and they were educated and had properties and et cetera. But very soon, all of that changed, especially with the death of his brother, the death of his father, and simultaneously, his mother's father, who was also very wealthy, started to get into financial difficulties. So everything, you could say, came to a crash at a very young age for him. So there was struggles. But at the same time, during all of that, he was exhibiting some of his transcendental qualities. He was very poetic, even at a young age. It says that at 2 years old, he composed his first poem. Yeah, Hare Krishna. And and he went, his first schooling was in the village there, and he was very good at his studies and excelled in his studies and was congratulated a lot and encouraged a lot by his teachers, and that kept him motivated to keep studying, that encouragement by his teachers. But very soon in the village, another school opened, an English medium school opened, and he was very interested, even at a young age, in learning in English. So he would go to his quote-unquote proper school, and then during lunch break at that school, he would go over to the English school and listen to classes there. And so he was very eager to learn English and learned it quite proficiently. And that was, he utilized in his service to the Lord. So again, another thing I was trying to frame this in his the time that he was born. So this was with the time when the British were ruling India. So they had started their interests in India through trading spices and this and that, and then jewels and then this, and then the East India Railway Company and so many things. They were gradually making a very big influence in India. And their method of influencing the Hindus was to deprecate, totally deprecate and criticize the Hindu beliefs and theistic nature of the general Hindus. And so learned people, you know, the educated people like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family, they were influenced by that because the British provided the good paying jobs and they provided so much facility for living, so that they were interested in taking up that or following their line of reasoning. So it was very much prevalent, that like Srila Prabhupada would say, everything made in England was better. That consciousness was starting to pervade the Indian thought, especially the upper classes. Everything made in England was much better than anything in India. And so Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's around that time when all of that was foaming and fermenting in the society. So his family, Hindu family, they weren't particularly strong Vaishnavas. They were Hindus and they would participate in the various festivals and this and that. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said he loved to participate in the festivals, especially when there was feasts. He would love to go to all the different festivals to take the feast that they had afterwards. But he wasn't a very strong, he wasn't captivated by the philosophy, and actually it wasn't very clear what the Hindu philosophy was at the time. So, again, because he had that wealthy situation in his family, they had a huge house, but as their fortunes, you could say, reversed, it became more troublesome to maintain that big house. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that he was, even as a young boy, because his father died when he was 7, so then he was, and his 3 other older brothers were also left their bodies. So then he was in charge of his mother, he had a sister at the same time, and the household thing. So he was always in anxiety because the perception for the public was that they were very wealthy and had lots of money, even though everything had just crashed. But so he was like trying to protect the big house, and he had to give he had some guards around the house. He said, I had to give them bamboo sticks because I was so worried that people would come to plunder. But actually, some of those guards were some of his first teachers, you could say, or his first encounters with Vaishnav philosophy. So one of the guards at that time had been a dacoit, a murderer, and somehow or other, there's no description of how he changed his ways, but he obviously had changed his ways and became a guard there, had an honest job, you could say. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he would go to him and ask him different questions. And he was that converted dacoit. He was very knowledgeable in the Ramayana and Ramayana and Mahabharata. And he would tell Bhaktivinoda Thakur different stories from those literatures. And that kind of was a little seed of faith in Vaishnava philosophy. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also at the time, there was, as usual, there's things happening in society. There was, in the village that he lived in, there was a tree that was haunted by a Brahma Rakshasa. So a Brahma Rakshasa is a Brahmin who left his body in an untimely manner, but he also didn't follow very many Brahminical principles. And so as a result, he's got power, but he's in a ghostly body. So there was a tree that was inhabited by a Brahma Rakshasa, and anyone who would walk by that tree would disappear. And the next day, there would just be a pile of bones on the ground. So, you know, one time it happened, a couple of times it happened, and then the people knew, don't go near that tree, you know? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as a young boy, he was afraid of ghosts. And this particular guard would tell him, if ever you're afraid, just chant the name of Ram, and Lord Ram will save you. So again, another seed planted in his heart. Didn't fructify right away, but still, it was a seed planted in his heart. So then, by the time he's 12 years old, the family couldn't even stay in that big house anymore. They had to move, and I can't remember where, sorry, but they did. And so his mother, Bhaktivinoda was or Kedarnath, sorry, Kedarnath. He was 12 years old, and his mother wanted to sever his ties, his karmic ties with his family, whose fortune had now turned upside down. And so she married him to a young little devotee in another village who was 5 years old. So he was 12, and Shyamamani, she was 5 years old. And the mother's motivation was, let him associate with people who have good karma. You know, that was her motivation, you know. And so there he is at 12, still in school, obviously, still going to school. And now he has a little wife and his mother to support, too. So Kedarnath's mother's side, there was an uncle that saw his capabilities and his potential and his inclination to learn English, and he took him to Calcutta, and he would so he got educated in Calcutta, in some English schools in Calcutta, even as a young boy. And but he would regularly go back to his village, visit his mom and his little wife. And around this time is when the village of Ula was completely flattened by the cholera virus. And he said that made a very big impression on his consciousness, on how there's, you know, the material world is such a miserable place. But he didn't have answers. He didn't have an alternative philosophy just yet. But that gradually comes, in the course of his time. So he... in his studies, he excelled in writing and in the English language, and he was very influenced by this pervading deprecation of Hindu values, and very much influenced how everything in England was better or English was better. And he was writing prolifically, even at that age, you know, 12 or young, before 20. And he wrote a 30-volume book on the exploits of Alexander the Great. And then he wrote another, and I don't know, many volume, like 10 or more volume book on some other mundane personality. And one time, and this is interesting, one time an English gentleman who was involved in the government service, who was admiring Srila Bhaktivinoda and noticing his potential and et cetera, he said to him, "Why are you writing all of this?" It's interesting how Krishna puts these little sparks in our life, put these little situations in our life, just like previously mentioned, when the village of Ula was wiped out with cholera, that had a big effect. And that question, why are you writing this, had a big effect on his life. And he thought, yeah, what's the point of glorifying Alexander the Great or whatever? You know, it had another deep effect. So gradually he came in inquired more about spiritual principles, gradually came in the association of the devotees, and he's like 18, 19, 20, still in school, he's still going for higher education, but he's also got the wife and his mother to support, so he's taking different jobs. So some of his first jobs were teacher jobs, and one of his very first jobs was a teacher of second grade kids, and it paid like, I don't know, 15 rupees a month or something very minimal. Then he got another job, a better job, because he was proficient in English and he was intelligent and smart and quick and stuff. He got another job that paid way much more, so he thought it would be better. He got a job as the treasurer of a sugar factory, you know, so he had to manage the money and keep the books and everything. thing. Some of you bookkeepers can relate to that, how tedious that is. But one time, one of the customers who came to buy sugar paid more money than he needed to for the amount of sugar he got, you know. He paid extra. And when Bhaktivinod saw that, Kedarnath Dutt at the time, sorry. When Kedarnath Dutt saw that, he couldn't accept that extra money. So he called them back in and gave him the credit back that he deserved. But when the owner of the sugar factory saw that, he said, "You're not fit for this job. You're a Brahmin. Go get a Brahminical job." So although it paid more, this and that, and made it life, quote unquote, easier, it wasn't to his nature, and so he had to keep searching for another job. So gradually his jobs got a little higher pay. At one point, he became the principal of a school, et cetera, et cetera. Then, because of his proficiency in English, he was the English were marking him, you could say. They were marking him. And through some friend, contact with a friend, then he got a job, you know, not a high-paying job, a low-ranking job in the government. But that's how he started. He got his foot in the door with government service, you could say. It was explained that it was on the sixth level down of management. So he had... But gradually climbing the quote-unquote ladder there, he became up to the second level. And by that time, he was in Puri and got the service as the magistrate in Puri. But before we go there, so he's around 20 years old at this particular point, and his wife now is 12 years old, and she has her first child. He's 20, she's 12. But unfortunately, even that happy situation didn't last much longer, because after 10 months of giving birth to that child, his wife also died. And so there he was, 20 years old with a 10-month-old child, and so his mother had him married again quite quickly, and this time that's when he was married to Bhagavati, and she was the mother of all the rest of his children, which some people say he had 10 more kids. Some people say he had 12 more kids. So he had a lot of children through her, and she was there. And she left her body 6 years after Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur left his body. But anyway, aside from that, but now he's been associating with the Vaishnavas. He's coming in contact with Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, and he becomes interested in Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, and he wants to get a copy of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. No problem, right? Lord Chaitanya appeared in Bengal not so long ago, a few hundred years before him. He should be able to get a Chaitanya Charitamrita. But because after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya and his close associates, after they're all disappeared, the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy becomes very much contaminated by different atheistic concepts. And there's reference to the different 12 upa sampradayas, or unbona fide sampradayas, that were prominent at the time, all having different nuances of misconceptions of Lord Chaitanya's position, and et cetera, et cetera. But so because of that, it was very difficult to find a bona fide copy of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And one account that I read, or maybe heard in one of the classes that I heard on it, said that it took him 12 years to find a copy of... Do you know if that's true, Dasarath Prabhu? Okay, I'm not sure either it's 100% true, because I've heard different things. Anyway, but it took him a while, we could say that for sure, to find a bona fide copy of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when he found it, he immersed himself in reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he said, "The first time I read Chaitanya Charitamrita, I was really surprised," he said, "that Lord Chaitanya was declaring that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead." He said that, or something to that effect. I might be paraphrasing it incorrectly. But anyways, he was surprised. Because why? Because having been influenced by that British mentality that everything in India was bad, when the British read about Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, they thought he was just a debauchee, you know, a sense enjoyer, because they didn't hear from the proper source. But anyway, so that was Bhaktivinoda's first reaction, his first reaction. And then he said he read it again, and then he read it again. He read it three times. And during that time, he read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and studied them all within 1 year's time, and became more and more convinced and apparently convinced. He was obviously very convinced from the very beginning. And this is why I mentioned, this is why I wanted to mention his spiritual position in the spiritual world, his eternal identity. And then you see the struggle that appeared to be quite a mundane struggle of coming to the absolute truth. It appears that way. So how that affected me, and I wanted to share it with you, is how quick I am to judge external circumstances. Yeah, you're right. And make offenses, that's the next thing to say. And make offenses on external circumstances, when actually we really don't know the history of who's who and who's here and who and what people have done. In this lifetime, now I'm talking about conditioned soul like myself, had no concept of what I did in the past to be in this body. And, you know, but we don't know. The body, you know, once you change your body, you can't remember anything from your last life, usually. But so, example being, how, and we're always encouraged to take advantage and appreciate the association of the Vaishnavas. And so, for someone like myself who is expert, I'm expert at fault finding. And try as hard as I can, this is a little bit more ammunition to try to defeat that witch that's in my consciousness of finding fault, because we don't know who people are in their past sojourn and how they've gotten here and how much progress they've made and how Krishna might be placing them to interact with us, either favorably or unfavorably, but as a lesson for us to learn, you know, to appreciate the association of Vaishnavas. Anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's obviously very strong in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. It was explained that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is like the architect of the Krishna consciousness movement. He drew up the plans for the Krishna consciousness movement, the framework, the plan, how it was. There's that song that we were singing on the marketplace of the holy name, and he has the whole system, you know, come and beg the holy name, and, you know, I'll sell you your, you know, just for the price of your faith, I'll sell you the holy name is everything, and I'm just going to be the sweeper. So many things he had. And he, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his later years, he was the one who established the Namhatta program all around India. Single-handedly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur established 500 Namhat centers, each with at least 200 participants in each center, you know, and that was his plan, how to spread, you know, like a grassroots effort, you could say, or I'm saying, how to spread Krishna consciousness around. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like the architect. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, his illustrious son, was like the engineer. And he, you know, had the printing press and was totally dedicated to propagation of written literature so that people could get bona fide understanding, you know, an association. And Srila Prabhupada, he was like executing, you know, following the architect's plan, following the engineer's plan, and he's like the man on the ground distributing Krishna consciousness all to the most fallen conditioned souls, all because of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's transcendental vision. And it was not without dangers to his personal self also, too. We can hear about, going blank for a second, but it's going to come to me. Haridas Thakur, he got beaten because he was a converted Muslim, now quote-unquote Hindu. He got beaten in the marketplace. Who else was... It's another example I was going to give. Anyway, someone who... Jesus Christ, who, you know, by preaching Christ consciousness, he was killed. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also, he was threatened, physically threatened. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a couple of times, there was, one time was Puri, but there was another time too. Oh, Bhishakshena, when he was put in the post and charge in Jagannath Puri, that this Bhishakshena was prominent at the time, and he was claiming himself to be an incarnation of Mahavishnu, but then was, you know, using that to attract. And he had mystic powers. Bhishakshena had mystic powers, and he could cure incurable diseases and help people that couldn't get help in any other way. And therefore, he got a large following. So he was very popular. But the British noted him, Bhishakshena. And they didn't like him because he was saying, at a certain point he was saying, he gave a date, which I can't remember what it was, let's say in a month, I'm going to manifest my forearm form and I'm going to kill all the Malechas, meaning the British, you know. So he was advertising that. The British got a hold of that. They wanted to dispose of him also. So they entrusted Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you get rid of him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur did his research and this and that and found out, yeah, that he's a total charlatan, et cetera, et cetera. So he went to Bhishakshena's place to arrest him. And he went with some constables. But as he went to arrest him, sparks started emanating from his body and all the constables ran away. And the very first thing that he did, Bhishakshena did, was start to flatter Bhaktivinoda Thakur to try to get him on his side so that they could be together, and then they would be very powerful. And Srila Bhakti and Kedarnath Datta at the time, he obviously didn't want to have anything to do with it. And somehow or other, and I don't know the details, somehow or other he was arrested, okay? But still, Bhishakshena was still so full of his austerities and his mystic potencies accumulated through austerities, that even in prison, he was in prison for like 21 days. He didn't eat or drink for 21 days. And he, Bhishakshena, was performing, chanting mantras to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And what was happening was that different people in his family, his son became sick and this one became sick, and his wife got nervous. Said, please leave him alone. He's going to destroy our family. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wouldn't have, you know, he wouldn't waver at all. He didn't waver at all. He said, let our family die. But this rogue has to be removed. And so one account that I read said that an English person in the government, an Englishman, was reading about different Hindu traditions, and he read that a lot of the mystic yogis kept their hair, their potency in their hair. And he, this English gentleman, came up behind him and cut his hair. Now, I've heard different stories that it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur that cut his hair, but anyway, I'm just sharing you. Yeah. Okay, thanks. Thanks. Oh, thank you. Divyanga Prabhu was saying he just listened to a tape last night of Srila Prabhupada. He said tape. He meant CD or something, but he said tape. Yeah, the Prabhupada box. Where they wanted to cut his hair, the Bhishakshena's hair, and so they brought in a barber to do it, but the barber was afraid to do it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, give me the scissors. Anyway, so his hair was cut, his mystic potency that was kept in his hair all fell to the ground, and Bhishakshena fell to the ground also, not dead right at that point, but powerless at that point, but died a few days after that. And then there was another time in as a magistrate in Puri that when he was in Puri, there was another time when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was looking at the books, the temple books, and he was seeing misappropriation of funds by the king. The king was misappropriating. He was in the lecture that I was listening to, they said he was borrowing money from the hundi box, but forgetting to pay it back. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he could see that in the book. So he approached the king and said, "You've got to pay that back, or else, you know, you're in deep doo-doo." And the king, somehow or other, he didn't have the funds to pay it back. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur fined him. He fined him to support the temple in Puri by sponsoring the 54 items, the 54 bhoga offerings a day in Puri. But in the meantime, the king had hired some tantric Brahmins and had them in his basement of his palace, and they were performing a yajna to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it went on for 21 days, this yajna, in the basement of the king of Puri. And the climax would be to the last offering, the last swaha into the fire. Srila Bhaktivinoda, well, Kedarnath Dutt would leave his body. That was the point. That was the goal. So 18, 19, 20 days, 21 days, they're coming down to the hour, and they make the last offering into the fire, and all the king's family members are standing by the fire in the basement waiting for Bhaktivinoda Thakur to leave his body. And the last offering, swaha, the king's son dies by the protection of the Lord. He's protected by the Lord. He was protected by the Lord in so many circumstances. So anyway, just some of the interesting things. And also, do many of you get the Krishna Katamrita Bindu magazine that, what's his name, Prabhu? Madhavananda, thank you, sends out? Because there was just something in there, this last one that just came out, this last Akadasi, that I just thought I'd share with you. And I was hoping that not many of you would get it so that you wouldn't be hearing it twice. So here it goes. So this is Activities of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jagannath Puri. And this is part two, okay? And this is written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, okay? So he says, "When I stayed in Puri, I made a lot of advancement in devotional service. I became more detached in my worldly life, and there was no longer any misunderstanding that worldly progress might produce anything of lasting value. Generally, I would go to the temple every day for darshan, nam kirtan, shravana, and sadhu sangha in the evening. Any day that I did not eat Jagannath's urdal, I would not feel satisfied." And then there's some more. "As soon as I entered the temple, someone would give me dal. On one side of the temple was the Mukti Mandap, where the Brahmins would sit and teach. All of them were Mayavadis. When I went near them, my mind felt disturbed. Therefore, I would sit near the goddess Lakshmi's Mandir or by Mahaprabhu's Padapadma, his lotus feet. When I sat there, many pandits from the Mukti Mandap would come and sit with us. I named this place Bhakti Pragyan. Our learned meetings at this place gradually developed nicely. Just as the Jagannath temple is very lofty and beautiful, so the seva was also wonderful. To see that pastime of service charms one's mind. 500 to 700 people are daily present to behold the routine festivals, such as evening arti. What bliss! Many kinds of participants come from all over India to attend the religious festivals. Seeing this, the eyes are soothed. O Lalu," because he's writing to his son, "O Lalu, only when you see all these pastimes with a pure heart can these servants be understood. There were many yatras celebrated there, such as Dola Yatra, Ratha Yatra, etc. I had the responsibility of watching over these festivals. Taking many constables and several karmacharis, or fruitive materialists, with me, I made so much effort to oversee the pilgrims that I cannot write about it. I would make the favorable arrangements for the pilgrims to see the deity and to take prasad and to hear complaints from the people. The king and such like and the karmacharis of the temple used to commit many illegal acts, referring to that king. I would go there to prevent all such things, and thus I made enemies of the king and the king's men. Because I was helped by the Lord, by Lord Jagannath, no one was able to harm me in any way. I served Lord Jagannath at my ease for almost 5 years. While in Purushottama Kshetra, I changed my residence several times. Finally, by the grace of Ramachandra Atya, I got a house of my own. On the night of the 16th of Magh, 1872, Kamala Prasad was born in the residence of Kali Choudhury by the pond Shravanali. And then on the 25th of Magh, and that's 1874, Bimala Prasad, or Srila, who will later become Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, took birth in the house of Ramachandra Atya. All of these auspicious ceremonies, such as Annaprasana, the first eating of grains, were performed with Jagannath Prasad. We gave up all karmakanda activities and depended solely on Prasad. As soon as I arrived in Puri, I got all the registration work, and because of that, I received a minor promotion. In 1870, I was promoted to the fifth grade, for which I received a salary of 300 rupees per month. In that year, I got full powers of a magistrate. I spent the time in Puri in great happiness, observing the festivals and acquiring knowledge and devotion. Sri Purushottam Kshetra is directly Vaikuntha. What doubt is there? I do not like to leave this place, but then Sadhu, his younger daughter, was getting older, and I had to return to Bengal in order to arrange her marriage. And that's from his own autobiography, Sri Svalikita Jivani. Anyway, those are a few of the things that I wanted to share about Bhakti Vinod Thakur so that we could appreciate his tremendous work. And then I was going to talk about Gundicha Marjuna, but I think I'll skip on that. But I'll just say this one thing. Today is the Gundicha Marjuna Day, because that happens the day before the Puri Rath Yatra, and tomorrow is Rath Yatra in Puri. So it was Lord Chaitanya's desire to clean. So Lord Jagannath, he goes out of his temple and he goes on his parade, etc., etc., and then his body is renovated. That's the usual thing for 2 weeks. So at that 2 week period, he's staying in Gundicha temple, I think. Anyway, so Lord Chaitanya wanted to clean that temple. So he engaged all his followers in a very ecstatic program of Gundicha Marjuna, where nobody said anything but Krishna, 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 Krishna. And hundreds of devotees got hundreds of water pots and threw hundreds of water pots on the ceiling first, which went down the walls. And then after the ceiling and the walls were cleaned, then they cleaned the Shringhasana. And even then, Lord Chaitanya wasn't satisfied. They cleaned the boga room and the kitchen. They cleaned that. Then they also cleaned the Nrisinga temple, which was outside nearby, and also the another temple of Lakshmi that was nearby. And then, not satisfied with that maha cleanup the first time, then he had them do it again, clean it again. Finer and finer dirt and dust was removed. And then one of the most remarkable things about that, all the pile of dirt and dust that the hundreds of devotees gathered up was small compared to the pile of dust and dirt that Lord Chaitanya gathered. So he was teaching us through that example of be very meticulous, be very alert, be very aware, be very conscious of cleaning our heart, of the anarthas. Don't let them sit in your heart, those dirty things in the heart, like fault finding. do your best to clean them out and keep at it until it. The example was given, clean marble, as smooth and refreshing as clean marble to clean that heart. So those are just a few, hopefully coherent, hopefully not totally incoherent, thoughts on Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And there's a lot more to say, which you can say during the day. Comments, questions, or more corrections, because I'm Hare Krishna. Only by your grace and encouragement. Corrections or whatever, anything, Dasarath Prabhu, would you like to add? Yes, Dasarath.
Hare Krishna, thank you for that Bhaktivinod Leelamrita tsunami blessing our eardrums, which are very happy right now. You hardly even looked at your notes. You must have been studying Bhaktivinod
all week.
I can't
read my notes. I just write them as an exercise.
But you memorized
everything.
I can't
even read my writing. But anyway.
Anyway, you have at your homestead a number of Acharya's books, and so there's two entire shelves of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Sanskrit, Bengali, Hindi.
That some person very meticulously traveled all over India in a younger age, in a more healthy situation, and gathered.
Somebody.
Dasarath.
So
Kijai.
If you ever want darshan of Bhaktivinoda's books, or even just see them or touch one of them, to be blessed, make an appointment with the librarian, and that can be arranged.
And he doesn't charge very much either. Hare Krishna.
So one of Bhaktivinoda, I think he did about 120-something titles.
Yes.
And we have about 75 of those. So one of the most obscure books he wrote that I never hear or see anybody talking about is called Vijan Gram. Vijan Gram means the deserted village. So you mentioned he went back to Ulanagar, which was devastated by cholera. So this whole book, it's wrote in Bengali free verse. He's not
really
rhyming. It's a little book, but it's a long poem. And so he goes back to his devastated village, and he's reminiscing, oh, this is the place we used to play. This used to be my relative's house. This is where my school was. Mm. So he's almost like a regular human being. He's having sentiment and attachment for where he was born and raised. And so he also brings the philosophical aspect, of course. But that's just a very interesting book that it always hovers around close to me. Mm. But I don't think anybody translated it. Mm. Vijan Gram.
Thanks.
The deserted village.
Thanks. Thank you. Steve D.
On the new Gundicha cleansing?
Yes.
Or Gundicha cleansing. Were you in Boston when they built the altar, the new on 72 comp? No. Because I heard from Srinath that, so they're building that altar in Boston, and about the same time, according to him, they came out with the Chaitanya Charitamrita with the pastime of the cleansing of Gundicha temple, and they had the painting there of Lord Chaitanya cleaning the altar. And there was a design on the Sringasan on the altar that he was cleaning of these elephants or something, at the top. It's just some carving. And they were building, they had just completed, or they were building the same altar in Boston Temple, New Guinea, and they had the same design.
Oh.
And according to Srinath, it was like
serendipitous.
Serendipitous, that word.
That word.
So the picture in the Chaitanya Rita, Lord Chaitanya cleaning Gundicha Mar, is the same altar design as in Boston, and where is New Gundicha.
Here's one of my Boston remembrances really quick. When I was there in 72, we used to clean the altar. We used to take the deities off the altar, put them in the back of the room on the bookshelf, and clean the altar, and then bring them back. Okay, Hare Krishna. Yes.
I was wondering that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one sense, he is the one who brought back Vaishnavism into, rebrought it or whatever. So my question is, what kind of, you're mentioning about association. So who are these Vaishnavas that he was associating, and who is the one who, how did he hear about the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he wanted to?
As far as I read, that was not very clear. Okay, now that I only researches for a few days or weeks, so I'm not that well read. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't particularly clear. Mm-hmm. Now we know that his initiating guru was Bipin Bihari, mm-hmm. Who comes in the line of Janava Mata, mm-hmm. you know, and that was his initiating guru. And later he got the association of Jagannath Das Babaji, and he accepted him as Shiksha Guru, and he leaned, he took more instruction from Jagannath Das Babaji. So, but that, I don't know, you know, the details of that. Go ahead.
Another thing, I was just appreciating your class because it described, you know, Bhakti as a person, like yeah. his life and reality, you know, it's just a very, very, yeah, it was really like that. Go ahead.
Thanks for reminding me. That was one point, that it was, that his life is relatable to yes. us. You know what I mean? And our struggles and this and that and trying to, it's relatable. Just like, say, for example, if he had come down, you know, and he was born, you know, effulgent and perfect and this and that and knew all the scriptures and he didn't say mama, dada in the beginning. He just started to say sarva dharma parijaja, you know what I mean, like that. He only ate once a year, things like that. We'd think, how am I ever going to attain like that? It's not even particularly appealing. Yeah. But by having a quote-unquote normal, challenging life, mm-hmm. it's relatable for us. So that, particularly in Kali Yuga, mm-hmm. we need things like that.
And if anybody doesn't have any other comment, I wanted to express also the fact that you, you were mentioning about how the English, the Britishers, when they were ruling and how it affected, and to hear about his family being also, you know, let's say, affected by, or, you know, by what they were expressing. And it's so strong, even to this day that is being affected.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that actually, and I don't think so, I'm just making some biased comment or something, but I think it's really Srila Prabhupada's coming and giving Krishna consciousness to the people now through, you know, the devotees have preached, you know, you have preached, others have preached and brought it to back to India, that because of the knowledge that Srila Prabhupada has given, like so scientific, that thing is actually dismantling that idea about that the Britishers, what they, because it, even to this day, people have this idea about the Britishers, what they, it's culture, it's like in the blood now, so to speak, of every Indian thinking they're Britishers. But Srila Prabhupada's books have really, has actually, anyway. That's
nice point. There are a few more comments. Yes, dear. Hold on, because there's people listening that can't hear, unless you speak into the mic.
One small comment I'm going to say, because when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his village, when he grew up and born and grew up, they were kind of low-class Brahmins, or low-class people. They didn't have big culture, and quite often they were not even following the principles of Vaishnavism. His books that he wrote are very simplistic, like to make,
Yeah, that was one. It's not that they were just low-class people. Any place has all different types of people, but there were some of a lower understanding. But that was his point, and that was his expertise. He wrote, and Prabhupada says, in simple Bengali language, he talks that about Narottam Das Thakur, they write the conclusion of the Vedas so that everybody has access. Not that you have to have a special, you know, degree in Sanskrit to get the access to the Vedic literatures. No, everybody has access, and that's why Srila Prabhupada was always pushing print books, translate them into all the languages so that people have access. The beginning part. Thank you. Ragatmika Ji.
I like that you started out with expressing his exalted position eternally. Mm. And as we heard this narration of all these struggles and such, it really, I kept going back, but he's this exalted. Yeah. So this is Krishna's arrangement, but then you also gave your realization about, that's very good, thank you. for reminding us.
Do you have to remind me? Because although they come, the realizations come, and then the activities also come,
right,
the
here,
unrealized too. Activities, I mean.
Thank
and if you,
you
have,
thank
do you
for
have
your
a minute
research.
From one more thing of Bhaktivinoda? Oh, yes, okay. Mahatma Prabhu. Hold on. Hold that thought. And don't forget it in the meantime. I don't know if that affects you, but it affects me.
You know, I think one significant thing is Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a huge family, like 10 children, right? And he had a full-time job.
Yeah.
And Dasarath Prabhu said he wrote 120 books in that situation. And he was waking up at midnight and writing. So it's just nice to remember if anyone's a little busy and thinks they don't have time for this or that, to remember Bhaktivinoda Thakur did all that with more kids than we have.
Thank you.
And more work probably than we have.
Yeah. And if you have, thank you for that. That's totally true. Here's a little thing that from a personal realization of myself, that I find that I always think that I'm really busy and then somebody wants to give me something else to do or this or that. And I think my immediate reaction is, I can't do that. And then I think, okay, change your attitude. Sorry. Change your attitude and Krishna, it's Krishna's time. He can expand it or he can contract it. And if you try to use your energy and time and endeavor in Krishna's service, he can expand the time. So sometimes I find that he does. He expands the time and it fits in. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, didn't mention about his schedule because it's so heavy duty. He would go to he would take rest from 8 o'clock at night till 10 o'clock at night. And then get up and write for 6 hours, and then do correspondence, and then take a little nap or a snap or whatever, and et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, he had an intense schedule. And, oh yeah, okay, sure. Go ahead. Ranjit Prabhu. And I'll put this.
Yes, aside. There are just two things of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings that I recommend. The first would be Tattva Viveka. Tattva Viveka was a book in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains all the varieties of philosophical knowledge.
Mm.
And it's a very small book, but it has this incredible analysis of all the different philosophies of the world. From right in the beginning, I won't give the main comment. And the other thing that devotees should read, there's a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is totally on the other spectrum. It's called Ami Jamuna Puline.
Hmm.
And it describes, come with me on the banks of the Jamuna and see Krishna and his pastimes. So those two sides of him are very instructive, very amazing, actually. Thank you.
Thank you. And so here's the last thing. I get the last word. Ha ha. Because it's Bhaktivinoda's words. So this is the 10 symptoms of the non-envious. And what he's done here in this little, stated all the 10 offenses, what not to do in chanting the holy name, the 10 offenses. He's put them in a positive way. So here it is. Number one is, he who is free from envy by his very nature never criticizes sadhus. 2, he does not consider demigods to be independent lords, for his intelligence is absorbed only in Sri Krishna, yet he does not disregard them, the demigods. He has faith, Shraddha, in Sri Guru and all other superior devotees as benefits each of them. 4, he offers respects to the bhakti scriptures like Shruti. 5, abandoning meaningless arguments, he apprehends how the holy name is the topmost meaningful attainment, paramartha, a perception rooted in perfect conviction that the holy name and its owner, the nama and the nami, are one and the same. He never engages in wickedness while depending on protection of the holy name. 7, he does not consider the auspiciousness of ordinary piety, such as social dharma, religious vows, vratas, or renunciation, to be comparable in any way to the chanting of the holy names. 8, he tries to inculcate faith in the faithless, but never grants them the holy name until that faith has awakened. 9, he believes completely in the glories of the holy name as described in the scriptures. And 10, he is devoid of any sense of I and mine in relation to mundane things. Okay, I'm so envious I can't even read it correctly. Oh, readers, non-enviousness alone is liberation for the living being, and envy is his only bondage. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it has therefore been said, Chaitanya Charita Suna Shraddha Bhakti Kari Matsaracha Diya Mukhe Bala Hari Hari. Endowed with full faith and devotion, listen to the life work of Sri Chaitanya. Cast aside envy and let your mouth sing. Hari, Hari. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Hari, 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 Hari bol. Hari Krishna.